we are calling the Taking Stock meeting. This is an interim discussion, just to kind of get our own individual pulses as to some of the issues, see if we can narrow something or not, and just have a general discussion that I think should be instructive, both for ourselves, for the public, as well as for the folks who we've asked to do work for us. So I don't believe we have any particular guests here this evening. We do have a number of members of the public. But what I'd like to do then, first of all, is review the agenda. Do we have any changes or additions to the agenda? Seeing none, the agenda as proposed is approved. Public comment. This is the time when we allow for at least any member of the public to speak for at least a few minutes with respect to any issue that is relevant to those before us. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak? All right, no member of the public wants to speak. Chair's report, there's no report. Staff report, Joe?
Yeah, just very quickly, a reminder again, use your microphones tonight. It makes it much easier for people to hear when they listen into your podcast of these meetings. I have extra copies of agendas and minutes here, and also Judge Galbraith's notes, if anybody needs those. And I guess the last item is we are in the process of making contact with OCA on Long Island. Ray and I are going to try to talk to a representative down there regarding district courts and whether we want to do a teleconference or anything with district court reps that we can do in this room. So that's in process.
All right, thanks. And by the way, I inadvertently skipped item two, the approval of the December 2nd minutes. You have them before you. And I would like to just make a correction. I've provided some typos to Joe, and he'll incorporate them into the final draft. But on a substantive issue, and I want to extend the apology of the panel, the task force, to Scott Miller, who actually did show up with a member of the public at the last meeting and unfortunately was not able to get in because the door had inadvertently been locked. And that was something that was unfortunate, and we were very, very sorry. So I suggest that we continue listing him as excused, but put an asterisk there and simply say that he did attend the meeting, arriving shortly after it started, but the door had been locked and he could not get in, and just leave it like that.
That was the banging you heard. I was going around to the front, trying to fit that. Really locked down that well. It's very secure.
That's good to know.
You didn't try the pebbles at the window?
I didn't think of that, actually.
I think they were throwing boulders. Yeah, but be careful. Anyways, any other changes with respect to the agenda? All right, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, passes. All right, so we have the staff report. You also have, what's been forwarded to you, was another set of data that have been provided by Julie Hughes in the Assigned Counsel Program. And I think that was circulated among the among our membership within the past week. And so that shows the after-hours arraignments for the period April 1st through September 30th of 2015. So, and as Joe mentioned, you have before you the Glenn Galbraith's comments, and he is excused. He thought he might be able to get here late, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So we'll take those into consideration. All right. So the taking stock, and I'm not exactly sure how this conversation, I certainly have no particular format. I just wanted to, we listed, Joe and I had listed these four items as in a general sort of way. In other words, what additional stakeholder testimony do we wish to have? We know what we do have, and we'll get to that in a minute. Any of the major stakeholder themes to date, the narrowing of the focus, if there are any areas of particular interest that we think we ought to focus on even more so, and then also just the nuts and bolts of what kind of further legal research or data collection do we wish to assign to the law students and who are assisting us. In connection with item A, the additional stakeholder testimony, we have scheduled the court clerks. I believe they are scheduled for the first meeting in January, which is January 13th. I know that I know Bill Shaw had asked, or at least will be submitting something with respect to youth court, the theory being that the point being that he apparently, you may recall that we received some articles that had been published in the New York State Bar Association about 4 or 5 years ago. And in one of those articles, remarkably, Bill Shaw was featured because he was an active participant in one of the original youth courts in the state of New York, which happened to be here in Tompkins County back in the 1960s when he was just a kid. And so I got in touch with him. He actually wanted to get in touch with me in any event pertaining to that, and so he would like to address us. Joe mentioned about the district court folks, and they're going to come in. And I think, what else do we have scheduled, Joe?
Maureen Reynolds would like to spend a little time with us to talk about some of the electronic records that she has made available. We've talked about, in fact, Judge Chernish is here, about bringing the Justice Court's judges back, and that probably gets into more of the, as you're developing findings and recommendations, but there will be time for that.
I'm sorry, and that's right, Bill. I apologize, Judge Chernish. You had mentioned that to me as well, and I made a note.
A progress report as well.
Okay, fair enough. And I guess the question is, are there any other stakeholders that we wish to hear from that we are somehow overlooking? Does anybody on the panel have any other thoughts or ideas with respect to that?
What happened with our efforts to find defendants who might speak to us?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I know that I'm not sure whether we asked defense attorneys if they would be interested in finding such individuals.
I don't recall doing that.
No, I don't think we did. So I don't think there's been any specific outreach. Do you have any ideas as to how you think we could accomplish that?
Through assigned counsel?
Julie, what do you think? Pardon? Would you mind stepping to a microphone? That'd be helpful.
I don't remember us talking about it, Mark, but I could ask a few attorneys on cases that are closed. Jason has some cases that are closed.
I'm not suggesting that it's a necessity. I am suggesting that it's odd that we not at least make an inquiry about whether there are people who have been through the system, who have what they consider to be useful comments on the adequacies, superiority, or inadequacies of the justice courts. And the only way I can think of to get to them would be through mm-hmm. defense attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I can look through prior clients and see if there's anybody I think might be interested, but.
And I will check with some of the attorneys who have the bigger caseloads and see if they have anyone that they think would want to come forward.
Fair enough. I mean, it is a sensitive thing, but I think that'd be great if you could find anybody
okay.
and they wanted to come.
Ray, I can also check with Deb Dietrich through OAR, maybe OAR.
Right.
Might be able to help there too.
Right, but for me, right now with our schedule at assigned counsel, it would probably be after like January 11th, and I know that Deb is going to be away for at least 3 weeks in January. So it might be a little bit after that, but we will check.
All right, well, we're going to be hopefully taking testimony all the way into February, so that would probably work. But that also brings up, I think we also, and I'm not sure, Joe, did we send a letter to the, I think it was the Landlords Association, I think?
We did. There were only a couple of names, so there was a city and a county landlords association, so only two letters would have gone out, and there was no response to those letters.
Okay, so at least the invitation went out.
Ray, could
yes,
I just, I know that one of the
the groups on our list was local government, and I, for myself, in our town, I'm very hands-off. We just sort of interact when it comes to budget time. Maybe others in, you know, local government would be more familiar, but I kind of doubt it.
We did send, I know, because I signed a bunch of letters to local government people, mm-hmm. town supervisors, and I know at least town supervisors. So I don't know, was there any interest? Jason, you're the other local government person?
Not on my board. I mean, Mary Ann, you know, she was part, I mean, she's still part of this group, but I haven't really heard from anybody else that they were interested. I mean, they by and large, like Elizabeth said, they don't interact with the court.
I think they're interested in hearing the outcome of this. They're very interested in hearing, you know, what we've learned, but I'm not sure if they can add to the conversation.
All right.
I mean, I think a lot of board members think that because the justices are elected in their own right and that all they're really doing is providing funding for the courts, you know, once they get beyond what are the clerks earning and, you know, what money is needed for training or like some equipment, they're not thinking about it very much. The only person who would even get a solid look at anything, I think, would be the supervisor, because you're sending the money coming, you're actually cutting the checks for the state. Mm-hmm. Even in our board, we get those reports, but I can tell you the other board members don't. They look at it and just know it's not coming to the town, so it's just another expense, and they just move on.
If you wanted us to poll town and village officials, we can do that through the TCOG. Either do it through email, and they meet tomorrow. I'm not going to be there, but we could probably get word to them.
Forward, yeah.
And just see if there's an interest.
Yep.
I think I'd like to hear that. I'll tell you the one set of data that would be helpful to me would be to find out what the in the global sort of way, and maybe we've already received it, though I don't recall seeing it. I'd love to know the amount of money that's been collected, either by court or at least countywide, and how much of that ultimately came back to the courts and how much of that ultimately went to, you know, somewhere else. So I'd be curious to know, fine money, that type of thing.
The comptroller has the amount year by year that was collected by the court, and then we'd have to just hit it and each individual municipality's budget to find out what they spent on their court.
So will that come back? But that adds another dimension. Will that come back in those court reports that we were going to get? Do you know?
I think I can get the money from other sources. I think that through the comptroller's report, I think I can find both revenues and expenses through other sources. But what I can't get is volume of activity.
Wouldn't it be under the Justice Court Fund, though?
Yeah,
and isn't
exactly
that a grand total?
Or there's personnel
as opposed
and non-personnel.
To each individual court within the county.
We can do it by court. So I know that we can do it by court. I don't know if it's expenses and revenues, or if they come from. But I think I can find the financial stuff.
I mean, candidly, I really, to me, it's not that important whether it's court by court as opposed to the grand total. In other words, I'd love to know, you know, in the county, this is how much money in 2014 or 2013 or 2012. This was the total of all of the fines that was paid into, you know, it's collected through all the courts, and this is the amount that came back, so that we would have basically two numbers.
Well, I can tell you that right now, because I'm looking at it. It's 1,487,000 collected, and the amount that remained in the towns and villages, 385,000, you know, say 500 to round it, 2014. And then the amount that stayed at the county, so the amount paid to the county is $110,650.
So
roughly we're talking, if you want to just round it up, about $500,000 stays local, and 991,000 goes to the state.
About 35%. And is that, does that include the city court, or is that just the town and village courts?
These are just the towns and villages. So,
is the city, do we know, is the city in the same kinds of percentages, or do they have a different set of rules?
They may have a different set, but let me see if I could find it.
Okay, but I mean, if it's on there, we can find it ourselves. Yeah, I just want to know.
This is justice court, so it's not.
I don't think
there's probably another tab for city court, but
I don't think we're on that one.
May not be.
Is the only missing piece then how much we actually spend on courts?
Yeah, so then I'd be curious to know how much we spend.
Yeah, and we can get that off of, but I mean, that's in everybody's budget, so, yeah.
Yeah, we can figure that out.
Yeah, it's a matter of, like, some budgets were probably listed more clearly than others because you have to look at the salary lines plus probably the bookkeepers are the ones who know the benefit lines because those are, like, in Dryden, our benefits for all the employees are lumped onto one line, but that's easy for me to ask the bookkeeper to break it out for whoever, because I know our justices are using our health care benefit.
Yeah,
that's, if they're both using individual, that's on top of their 40, the two of them make about 42,000 in salary, not each, but together, and then the health care is about, for the two of them, 26,000. And then we have the clerks. And I don't know if they're both utilizing healthcare or not, but they probably are. So that's probably another 26,000. And then their salaries are, I'm just kind of guesstimating, probably about 80 to 85,000 for the two of them.
All right, but I think the point is this could easily be something that we could, since the data is already out there, we could give it to one of our interns and ask them to simply put it all together, the grand total of all of the revenues, the grand total of all of the, you know, how that money comes back to the towns and villages and the county, do the same kind of a calculation for the city, and then also finally figure out what the different court expenses are doing all the calculations that Jason just referred to. So.
Right. Yeah. It's maybe it's obvious why that data isn't there. City court is part of the OCA budget, and I'm actually not sure. Certainly, the 6th judicial district has a budget for all of the county and city courts. I'm not sure how the 6th judicial district divides up their budget. Whether court by court, I don't think it is court by court. I think it's the 6th judicial district. That.
All right, but that's useful, and I think maybe what we can do is get if we could have our students kind of figure that out, and maybe even, you know, talk to whomever in the 6th judicial district, see if that can be parsed out or not.
It's all public record. I certainly think an intern could get.
They could find it.
All the current positions and salaries. And,
yeah, exactly. All right, let's go to, are there any other stakeholders that we're interested in hearing from? Does anybody have any of the other? All right, obviously this doesn't foreclose us down the road, but at least it gives us some sense of where we want to go in that regard. Let's just kind of open up the discussion truly to items B and C. You know, we do have the benefit of Glenn Galbraith having gone first and giving us some his thoughts and putting the pluses and minuses as to whether this is advantageous or not in any given particular issue. But that aside, I think it would be useful for us to just kind of go around the table and just kind of take the pulse, see where each of us, what are the things that we think. Where do you think this task force is headed? Or at least lay out some of your thoughts as to where you think you might be headed based on everything you've heard thus far. And please understand that we're doing this not so much because we want to make decisions at this point, but rather we want to make sure that we are not leaving any stone unturned with respect to hearing from people, and we also want to make sure that if everybody seems to think that a particular idea is really too far out in the weeds, let's not waste our time. So in that sense, I guess there's a kind of a decision being made. But anyways, who wants to go first? Go ahead, Scott.
All right, first, as far as where I think our focus should be, after we've had all the stakeholders present to us and all the discussions we had, is that one of the issues that you want me to address?
Where do you think this thing's going? I mean, for instance, we know that there's been talk about district courts, not district courts. We've been talking about lawyer-trained judges, not lawyer-trained judges. We've been talking about centralized arraignment places. We've talked about, the whole system of bail and fines and collections. We've talked about having DWI parts versus non-DWI, misdemeanor parts versus status quo versus making some changes. There have been so many issues that people have discussed. I think it would be useful to find out where we think as a group, what truly is realistic. If we intend to go in a particular direction, what kind of research will be necessary to identify what kinds of things would have to be done in order to accomplish that, and on and on and on. So I'm very curious where we sit. See if we can.
Are you ready to go?
Yeah,
okay, right. Go ahead.
I would certainly think at this point we're all in agreement. Civil cases, small claims, any civil jurisdiction that the town or village courts. That clearly has not been a major, significant, or even a considerably minor part of our discussion. Everything seems to be really focused on criminal cases and the concerns of the due process rights of the citizens that are coming before the town and village courts in criminal cases. So I think without question, we need to make it clear our focus is criminal jurisdiction. We sort of have already done that, I think, but I think it needs to be said that is our focus. Now, I found Glenn's notes very helpful in their bluntness. In fact, I think it was at the very end. I'm not sure how widely he wanted these disseminated.
I'll interrupt there. He asked and understood that these were going to be posted.
Okay. On page 4, he describes those questions that we had sent out in the very first couple of weeks. One of them suggested a topic of thought: abolish town village courts and replace with the district court. And Glenn describes this issue realistically as politically toxic. And I think I agree with that. I do agree with that. I think that should not be a focus of our committee's work as we bring it to a close and decide what we realistically want to achieve, if there's any recommendations. I don't think that's an appropriate and realistic a focus. I think there's two areas of focus that are realistic to see if we can come up with some recommendations that would benefit the entire county. One is some type of central arraignment facility for after-hours arraignments. And I think, Julia, you had mentioned that there is a central arraignment facility in another county that has town village courts and Chenango County has a central arraignment facility. Is that right?
That's what I understand. That was my last.
So I'm hoping Chenango County is the closest one, and I was going to suggest that some members of this committee actually since we've been discussing this about five times and even had the representatives of the Sheriff's Department here, I thought it made sense that maybe some of us take a trek out and see what this looks like, this thing that we're discussing, how it actually works. Does that help with cutting down expenses of trying to track down an attorney, and that may take 2 or 3 or 4 hours, trying to track down a town and village court judge? Does that prevent a New York State trooper and a sheriff from driving around for 3 or 4 hours with a defendant in his or her vehicle while they're not on the road performing their other police functions of protecting the public? We should probably visit one, since we've been discussing it so much. How does it work? The second area that I think there might be some area where we could do something coincides with Judge Littman's order that went out about a year ago, 12 months ago, I think, where Judge Littman ordered that all county and city courts have create DWI parts. And Lance Salisbury circulated a letter, and he addressed that. I still can't figure out why town and village courts are exempt from that. If we're going to have DWI parts, and there's some some rationale behind all DWI defendants should be in one part, and that's happening at the city and county level, and that's been ordered by Judge Littman, it doesn't seem to make any sense that the town and village courts are just on their own, and all of the DWI cases in those courts are part of what apparently Judge Littman thinks is a good idea. It does appear, and I've heard several times that those cases are the most complex cases that town and village courts hear. So that also lines up with the fact that there's been some criticism of having non-lawyer lay justices. If we can do anything, if we want to do anything, it's those two areas, a centralized arraignment facility, and let's bring town and village DWI cases, let's make them consistent with the way city and county DWI cases are handled. So those are the two areas that I've been thinking about.
Okay. Liz, you wanted to offer something?
Well, I was going through my notes today and kind of have items that seem to have repeatedly come up. The five courts being held on one day, a problem. It seems like the other comment, there was concern over uneven treatment or the justice being equitable, repeating comment. The limited hours of some courts seems to be something that we've heard several times. Again, as Scott mentioned, the DWI being heard in criminal cases seems to have been repeated. Recommendations for some sort of consolidation seem to have come up several times. Preventing bail from being used for punishment and adequate clerk hours. It seems like one thing that was not clear was whether attorney versus non-attorney was important overall. That seemed to be a little ambiguous, depending on which court you were in, and then the centralized booking. So those are the things that I, you know, as in my notes that seem to come up quite a lot. One of the things I think we still are missing, or several things, is we haven't looked at cost of the centralized any parts or all parts, what would be the difference in cost? And then I think we need to know what the process would be. You know, is this a referendum, or who makes this decision, and what is the process to, if we centralized anything, process, and when do we bring in I mean, I'm not quite sure where we connect in with, if local governments are involved at all in the process of making that decision. So those are my notes.
All right, thank you. That's helpful. And I do want to welcome, just so the record is clear, that Glenn Galbraith has joined us. And Glenn, you should know that we've been discussing your memo and everybody has expressed appreciation for the work you put into that and the items you identified. So we appreciate your making it, so that's good. And just so the record is clear, we also have, that was Liz Thomas, a member, Honorable Betty Poole is here, Honorable Glenn Galbraith is here, Mark Solomon is here, Jason Leifer is here, the Honorable Scott Miller is here, the Honorable Gwen Wilkinson, District Attorney, is here, and I'm Ray Schlatter. So that is the committee here. So we have a full complement this evening, and we're pleased at the turnout. All right, who would like to go next? Because I think, I guess, Liz, the question is, what I'm hearing you say is these are the areas where there have been things that have been discussed a lot, and it appears that one area that we need to address more fully is the whole issue of cost for any option that we're going to engage in. But is there anything from what you are, to what you're referring, is there anything there that you think we ought to either not pursue or should pursue, or what are your thoughts about that?
I didn't know what we should not pursue, so I don't really have an answer on that. But I do think we should do a thorough cost analysis. I know that that's going to be something that will come up, and it would be helpful to know the process if we do decide to make any changes or recommend any changes. I think the process is important to explain.
Okay, great. Thanks. Who else? Who would like to go next?
I'll go.
Betty, thanks. Judge Poole.
I will tell you that the magistrates, we had a meeting. We did have a meeting about a month ago. And we had brought up and made some suggestions, well, a couple of us did, and then presented it to the association, the ones that attended. And we had gotten some positive, not total positive, but consideration on several of the items that have been brought up at these meetings. We did mention DWI court. I agree totally with Judge Miller that, first of all, the court clerks would love it. and the judges, as a matter of fact. But I do feel, and you're right, it is a complex legal charge that is constantly changing, and it's going to continue to change. So if you had one central DWI court, that is one thing that we're continuing to discuss and would probably, most likely, but I certainly am not going to speak for all of them, be amenable to pursuing that. We were also looking at the court scheduling. We do have some judges that are very aware of the issues, especially on Monday night. Myself and being one of them, and so we're going to discuss that as well in order to be able to accommodate the defense attorneys, law enforcement, corrections, and any other parties involved. Also, possibly holding, if some of the judges don't want to change from a Monday night, I myself was thinking holding regular court on Monday night, then having the pretrials, which is normally the time that you get most of your defendants who are incarcerated or whatever come back. So having a separate night for pretrials, which would also help the DAs as well. We are also looking at the possibility of having on-call judges, which means we would schedule, like Julia does for assigned counsel, for the contiguous adjoining townships, whereby, as an example, Ulysses, Newfield, and Enfield. So we've got four judges there, plus Town of Ithaca. There's six judges. Having a judge on call for after-hour arraignments once every 6 weeks. So the judge would know that they have to be made, they have to be available. I think that would cut down the number of phone calls that they would have to make. And the judge would have to avail themselves of that. Again, we could, change the schedules according to the judge's schedules, et cetera, but that's something we're looking at as well. And I think it would be beneficial to law enforcement and to the attorneys if they know which judge is going to be on call. So those are things that we're looking at. I strongly do agree. I think the DWI court, along with some of the issues that I just pointed out, are the main issues I think I'd like to see focused on. It's my opinion. The lawyer, non-lawyer issue, I'm sure you know my stance on that, and as well as my colleagues in the association. I think it would cause a lot of legislative nightmares. So that's my position. So I'm DWI court, changing of the scheduling on-call judges, and also the a central lockup. We were amenable to looking into that. So
When you say central lockup, you're referring like a centralized arraignment?
Or for instance, a holding cell.
Oh, okay.
Not all that costly.
Basically what the other police department has.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Have it at the sheriff's department.
Do you mean one facility for all the county, or do you mean each justice court would have its own?
No.
It would, a holding cell would be at the sheriff's department.
Okay.
They could hold the defendant there until the following morning or whatever.
Okay.
By the way, is that, when you said that you wholly agree with Judge Miller, Scott's sentiments with respect to a centralized DWI part, is that a view that is shared by the other
judges that were present? And correct me, Bill, if I'm wrong, but they seemed amenable to it. Judge Dawson was not there. I don't know.
It was nearly unanimous. I'd say it was one vote. We had 12 of the 20 judges. Two were excused for out of town purposes. I think it was one person who didn't like the idea. The rest of them seemed to go along with it. Informal.
Okay, sure. Well, that's helpful. Mm-hmm. What about, and I know Glenn's memorandum was circulated after you folks met, the Magistrates Association met, but one of the most prominent points that Glenn made was that we really ought to get the Magistrate Association on board with respect to a number of the proposed changes so that, in fact, these things can actually happen.
Yes, I forwarded Glenn's memo to all of the magistrates, encouraged input, comments, and concerns with regard to his memo. I think it was very clear. I appreciated it, by the way, Glenn, so thank you very much. And I CC'd Glenn on that. So all of the judges in the association have his memo. Now it's up to them to respond.
Fair enough. Okay.
Mr. clarify, if
yes.
I may speak.
Yes, Judge Chernish.
Back bench here. The points in Glenn's memo were also the points that were raised at the meeting of the magistrates initially. So that what he has done was to expand upon those and to, I think, capture some of the sentiment that was raised at that meeting. Is that correct?
I think so.
Okay.
It's been a while.
It's been a while, but okay, good. Thanks. That's helpful.
It really did.
All right. Anybody else? Mark.
Yeah, I anticipate that Glenn will speak, having provided this very useful checklist of ways to focus on the issues. And I just want, in advance of that, to underscore something he said in this memorandum and to emphasize it perhaps more than he has. In his first page, in the second paragraph, he writes, before he's laid out his analyses, he writes, "I recognize that there might be some limitations on the ability," and I'm editing now, "of individual judges to bind themselves in advance on each of the issues below without possibly violating their judicial independence." Let me say, in my opinion, as a person who has studied the question of legal ethics generally, and judicial ethics in particular, I would suggest that numerous of these matters cannot be put to a promise by the judges in advance of cases without real risk. That would be a very bad idea, in my view. On the other hand, I am not saying that the magistrate should not be brought on board. I think we have an obligation to build whatever consensus it is we can build. I said at the first meeting I attended of this group, although there wasn't broad endorsement of my proposal, I said there is something to be said for the election by a small constituency of a person chosen by them to arbitrate their disputes. There is a fundamental democratic principle at work in the establishment and continuation of the justice courts. And if that is eroded or undone, it will be at some cost. I've also said the benefit may exceed the cost, but that's a question to be considered. Here, we ought to seek to build as wide and deep a consensus among the magistrates and ourselves as we can with respect to each of these propositions that you've heard from around the table from Scott and from Betty. But that is not to say that we could say to individual judges, you have an obligation to agree with us that under no circumstance will you, for example, seek bail just because whatever. Okay. Having said that, I want to turn to the question of, which Glenn did not much deal with, the question of lay judges versus non-lay judges. It's my view now, having heard very compelling argument from a number of people who came before us, it's my view that there is a real problem with non-lawyer judges hearing cases of legal complexity. But I want to suggest, it's my view at least, that that is a political problem. And its solution is a political solution. If there is real and substantial superiority in having lawyer judges in our town and justice courts, then it is the responsibility of concerned citizens and lawyers to make clear to the parties, that is to say the political parties, and the town and village councils, why they ought to nominate lawyer judges rather than non-lawyer judges, and let the people in those constituencies determine whether they prefer a lawyer judge or a non-lawyer judge. And I'm done.
Thank you, Mark. Jason?
Yes, there's a
question is to the lawyer versus non-lawyer judge. I mean, we can't, even if you're to move to a district court, which requires other legislation, I think at the state level, that's going to enter into that political discussion anyhow. But I, you know, I think it's pretty well known. I at this point, I seriously want us to at least, if you're going to have this, if you're going to lay out a political question, then I think that the whole idea of district courts needs to actually be laid out completely and what needs to be done to make that happen so that people can actually have the choice in front of them rather than kind of a not touching a question because some folks think it's toxic. You know, I've been through a judicial election myself in Dryden. I did it after moving here. You know, I lived in this county a year and a half at that point. And at that point, it was largely had little to do with that I was a lawyer versus the sitting judge as being a non-lawyer had to do. And I heard this from folks who voted, that it was more of a, we know the guy. It had nothing to do with qualifications. It was that they grew up with him. It was a popularity contest. And I think that election was one of, in the last 8 years that I've been involved politically in this county, there have been probably no more than 10 contested judicial elections in the entire, not including county court or the city court election, 10, maybe 10 contested judicial elections in the county. At least 4 of those have just been in Dryden. When we had a vacancy when Judge Valentinelli retired, I made it very clear to my board I was not supporting anybody but an attorney justice because I knew who was going to run on the other side anyway. But and the reasons were is we have such a busy court in Dryden that we really did need someone who could just hit the ground running. And while he still has things to learn, and you know, Judge Ravo's very plain about, very open about what he knows and doesn't know. Out of the folks we had come interview for it, I had no question in my mind who I was going to appoint, you know, vote to appoint. Cost-wise, I mean, just laying out the amount that we keep locally versus what gets sent to the state, there's no question that we'd having a district court that's paid for by the state or would save us money. I mean, there's absolutely no question in my mind, at least in Dryden, we would save tens of thousands of dollars, which could be just not part of my budget anymore, so people would pay less in property tax, or we could use it for something else. There's ways, I think, that you can accomplish some of that savings through the existing law, which, you know, smaller towns could maybe consolidate their justice courts, and it's happened in parts of the state, and I think there might be a few towns in Tompkins County that could do it and have a good quality court. Again, it just comes down, I think that what prevents it from happening, by and large, is hanging on to tradition for 200 years, for, you know, 200 years of tradition for tradition's sake, and it's not how we can do business in New York anymore. It's just that we are, as board town, I mean, I'm speaking as a town board member here, we have such financial pressure now with the tax cap, with costs still going up all over the place that we don't even have control over, that not at least taking the step to consolidate smaller town courts. I don't think a board that could actually do that. And I'm not suggesting Dryden could, because we're bigger than, you know, there's probably the bottom three courts. We probably still have more cases on our own than they do. not do that, I think, is just financially irresponsible at this point for some towns. And it's also not fair to the litigants because, I mean, I've had to deal with towns outside of Tompkins County where I can't reach the clerk because the hours they keep are so few that I have to use just a fax. Some of them just have voicemail. I mean, there's one court, I when I'm dealing with AUO cases and I'm trying to help a client find out how to pay, just to pay their fine or what they actually are, you know, what's actually outstanding. And I can, I've written courts and never received a response. And it's because, I mean, their hours are maybe 2 hours a week or something. That's just, it's not fair. That's not how you run a court. If, and like I said at the beginning of this thing, at the TCOG meeting where we were talking about having an establishment in this group, if you can't even fund a clerk to work part 20 hours a week for a court, then your town or village should really think about getting rid of it, because it's just not fair to the citizens. We've had a fight at our board level just to talk about the hours that our court clerks are going to keep, because we as a board said, you know, we don't want our clerks racking up comp time. Because it puts other people out, and we're, you know, and because the justice has set the hours, I think we mentioned that here. There's no, the town board can't set the court clerk hours or the court hours. All we can do is say, well, we're not going to give you a dollar more on your budget, and then leave it to the judges to figure that out. But there are towns and villages around that can't even fund a clerk to be there more than like 5 hours a week. It's not, I mean, who is that fair to? I mean, I even have an issue with towns that can't even fund their town clerk being there more than a couple hours a week. One of them is a town that borders Dryden. It's not in our county. And
now, do you have other ideas?
I think at the very least, we should be, if we're not going to be able to move the district court question much because of the other legislative challenges, we really need to start talking about which village and town courts in this county could merge. A lot of the things in Judge Galbraith's memo, I mean, are great. They'd be, at a minimum, if nothing else happens and we were to follow that, I think that'd be a great improvement. Many of those things. But those things, to me, are the stopgap while we really, you know, have an actual option on the table to let, I mean, if you want to let voters decide it, let them decide it, but you can't even give, yeah, they don't even get that chance until there's legislation enabling a district court to be formed here. I think if, with the way people talk about just their property tax, if they're actually given a chance to form a court that would take that burden off their local property tax, I think they'd probably jump at it. But in the meantime, doing what Judge Galbraith says makes a lot of sense. I think it would be a great improvement for the whole system.
Thank you, Jason. Gwen, would you like to go? Glenn, I'm going to ask you to go after Gwen, although you've given your...
In reverse alphabetical order.
Right.
Something by first like name.
Right.
I'm going to limit my comments sort of to the themes and narrowing the focus. I want to be a little bit macro. I do have specific thoughts or embryonic opinions about some of the detail issues, but I'd like to address some of the larger things here. And to start with, I'd like to say that I think the scope of our discussion, our inquiry, the range of the testimony that we have taken has actually gone pretty far beyond our strict mandate to find efficiencies through structural realignments. We have gone very deep into issues that people feel strongly about intellectually, professionally, personally. And we have amassed a fair amount of information, and I think we are likely to amass a lot more before we're done. And I would now like to divide my comments into two parts. First, briefly, regarding the formation of a district court, I think for the sake of thoroughness that we should follow, I think, Ray's suggestion, or maybe it was our whole committee's suggestion, that we task an intern with figuring out exactly what statutory requirements, what legislative measures, dot all the I's, cross all the T's, what would it take, and then we figure out what it would cost, and then we know if it's an efficiency. Frankly, I'll be surprised if it is. And in that vein, before I move on to my next and final major area of comment, at our first meeting, we all acknowledged that money savings were not likely here, right? We all did. So the question of economic efficiencies is pretty well bracketed. And I think now we're talking about, well, what could we do to make it more efficient and not cost too much, I think is maybe where we're at. And we have heard a lot of discussion around the issue of the lawyer versus the non-lawyer judges. And strongly felt positions have been articulated on both sides of that issue. I think that an area that we haven't looked at as hard as we might, given where we find ourselves, is how can we improve the justice court system that we have? Is there a way we can improve the system we already have? And by that, I mean the dispensing of justice by the judges. I have heard people come in here and say, well, we gotta have lawyer judges because non-lawyer judges don't know how to do law. And in a broad sense, that's as true as it is false. But the fact remains that we've had a lot of people come in here and say that local justices shouldn't do misdemeanor trials because they can put people in jail for a year and they might do it based on a error of law because they're not trained in the law and they're not lawyers and they don't know the law. And that may be true, and this may be a discussion we have for a long time, but I frankly don't think this committee is going to end up recommending that every local court justice in Tompkins County be a lawyer. I don't think there's the political will for it, and I don't think that it is a palatable conclusion to members of the local bench. I could be wrong. But what I do think is that we can focus on the options that we do have that we're not using to the max. Judge Raleigh testified that the number of appeals out of justice courts are very, very small. Every single justice court defendant who's convicted of a misdemeanor, if there's thought to be an error of law, they can have an appeal. And it can be heard at county court where it's going to be a law-trained judge. And if the local justice has made a mistake of law, that mistake of law is going to be pointed out. The case will be remitted or overturned or sent back for further proceedings not inconsistent with the appellate court's decision. I was surprised to hear Judge Raleigh say that a very high percentage of the cases that come before him are reversed, but a very low number of cases come to him, period. I think that's crazy. I think if defense attorneys feel that their client has been convicted after trial or pursuant to plea, pursuant to an error of law, somebody ought to take that up on their behalf. That's what lawyers do. Secondly, I think that local justices should request and require of OCA or any place they can get it, practical training in the management of a criminal case from start to finish, with particular emphasis on holding suppression hearings, getting comfortable with the rules of evidence in those hearings, the burdens of proof, getting some practical hands-on training about decision writing so they create a record. One of the widest criticisms of our justice courts is we don't have a good record to go up on appeal. This is something that training could be provided for. Running a trial. Some justice court judges have never held a trial. They don't know how to hold a trial. Well, this is the system we have now, and I think that while we're deciding if this is a system we're going to keep, we ought to at least see if we can make this system function in a way that dispenses the substantial justice that the justice courts are required to dispense. I am not going to get into the nitty-gritty of what I agree with and what I don't agree with in terms of recommendations, and people have spoken here tonight. I do want to say, though, in terms of just practical logistical efficiency, a centralized arraignment facility and a holding cell that would be capable of housing someone overnight with 24 hours, I think, pursuant to People v. Smalls or whatever that precedent is, I think those would be two huge there would be huge savings there and maybe indirectly because the police officer's time would not be so strained. The judge's time would not be so stressed out with 3, 4, 5 hours at night. So that's where I am at this point in the process with respect to these two issues. We don't know enough about justice court. We have heard the criticism and the thoughts about lawyer versus non-lawyer judges, but I don't think we've taken a hard look at can we fix any of the things that we feel are legitimate criticisms of the justice court proceedings running. And I think we should try to do that because I think that's the right thing.
Just a correction, you meant we don't know enough about the district court.
District court.
Okay, thanks.
Sorry.
Thanks. No, good. Glenn, do you want to say anything? Anything further?
I think I've already inflicted 5 pages worth of my thoughts on you all, and I'm not sure to extend that more. If people have questions about what I wrote, I'll be happy to react to that, but I don't have anything to add.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Scott.
Can you... describe for the panel and the record what you're talking about with criminal procedure law, and I know you and I have talked about it, but we need to get it a little more detailed into the record. Criminal procedure law 170.15, 170.25, that there is a something that exists out there in the criminal procedure law that defendants and the district attorney can actually participate in a procedure involving criminal cases and moving them in front of a county court or a Supreme Court judge. Could you describe what you're getting at there?
I haven't closely studied it, but my basic understanding is, and I don't think I was necessarily even aware of it until maybe you and I spoke 2 months ago, and that is that if a defense attorney is unhappy with the qualifications or potentially even the bias that a non-lawyer judge might have, that he or she would be perfectly capable of making a motion to have that case moved away from the non-lawyer judge to be reassigned by the county court to a lawyer judge. And maybe one reason I hadn't really thought about it before is I don't think I've ever seen it happen in this county. Therefore, I wasn't really even aware the procedure existed. But I think that does exist. And if I was defending a client and I really thought that the judge in front of me, who might happen to be a non-lawyer judge, wasn't actually capable of dealing with the complexity of the case, I'd feel duty-bound to try to get it removed. Now, my understanding is, and Ray's office has had some experience in this, at least in the past, is I think the local court has the initial right to say, no, I'm not going to let it get transferred. There's some discretion there, and which is why I was suggesting that to the extent that the Magistrates Association could commit in advance, and I think it goes back to what Mark was referring to, that is, we may not be allowed to commit in advance that we would always consent to that case being moved from a non-lawyer judge to a lawyer judge, but if we could at least get some recognition that that's an important thing, that judges should be perfectly happy to see that case go away and let somebody else handle it, if for no other reason just because it would appear to be more fair. And since it goes up to the county court, and then the county court judge gets to reassign it without anyone knowing who the new reassigned judge will be, the potential for judge shopping would be fairly limited. And I think that's what I was getting at, but it was really triggered more by Judge Miller's having sort of identified that that was even possible. I wasn't even particularly aware of it.
I can, since I've been using you.
Why don't you answer your own question?
As the mouthpiece for this, if I could add to what my understanding is, and the reason I was aware of it is back in 1998, I did make one of these motions, and one of our county court judges, who's long since retired, but boy, he looked like a county court judge. You know, the white hair, just he looked great. He his response when we got in front of him was, this is a misdemeanor. I'm a county court. I don't want any misdemeanors. Go back. So, but then I learned about this statute, and there is, I believe, 170, I think it's 170.25 of 170.25 of the criminal procedure law. I don't think that one requires consent of the local town court. A defendant can make a motion to a county court or a Supreme Court saying, there's in the interest of justice and there's good cause shown, this misdemeanor needs to be prosecuted by indictment. And then the Supreme Court or the county court can then order the district attorney to bring the matter before a grand jury. So that one actually is nothing that a town and village court would have to agree to. So 170.25 is out there for whatever it's worth.
Right, and that particular provision has been tested, and it's been the subject of a lot of litigation because, and I don't want to reiterate all this, but the bottom line, there's a case called North v. Russell where the Supreme Court basically said lawyer-trained judges are, that lawyer-trained judges, if there is no right of removal, are unconstitutional if they are presiding over misdemeanor offenses. That then went kind of through New York State discussion, and New York State finally said, well, we have this right of removal, albeit discretionary. And so then there were courts that said, well, in order for it to be constitutional, that discretion must be exercised in favor of the removal. So the practical effect is that if you make an application in Superior Court, it does not require the local judge, you make an application in Superior Court for removal, establish the good cause shown is, one issue could be non-lawyer trained judge, and then you ought to be able to get it removed to the county court to be prosecuted by indictment. But as Scott has just pointed out, it doesn't always happen for other reasons. I years ago had a case where I had a misdemeanor removed, and then it was then prosecuted by indictment. And the question then was, am I entitled to a 6-person jury or a 12-person jury? The judge, Judge Dean at that time, said, well, I think 12, and Marjorie Olds, the prosecutor, said, no, it's a misdemeanor, you only get 6. And Dean, I said, no, I agree with the judge. And she insisted, and the judge said to me, almost with a wink, said, I'll give you 0.1 on appeal, so I'll order 6. My guy was convicted. I went up on appeal, and the appellate division said, nope, if it's prosecuted by indictment, under the Constitution, you're entitled to 12-person jury. So
that's not necessarily an answer to...
That's not an answer to
county,
this. I'm
county
just...
County court can't necessarily...
But it's a good story.
It's a great story. Right.
But county court can't necessarily handle every misdemeanor that attorneys start saying, this needs to be by indictment. That's not a realistic solution, but maybe there needs to be training through the assigned counsel panel that procedure exists if they're not aware of it.
But in any event, we're digressing, but I think the point, you've alluded to it, and I think in your memo, Glenn, and I think that it could easily be more widely used and without making a whole lot of changes in the law. That's true. Do you have more that you would like to add or
no,
any other questions?
I really don't.
I'd like to kind of lay out some of my thoughts as well, and my sense of this is, and this has been, I think Gwen is correct, we have probably gone beyond the parameters, or at least the narrow parameters of our mandate, but I've never felt too uncomfortable about that because I think the mandate was somewhat generally drawn, and I think that this exercise has given the community a chance to weigh in at a number of levels with respect to a number of issues. And if the end result is that we improve the quality of justice in this county, from what is already I would consider to be a very high standard, we will be doing all of ourselves a favor. Now, that being said, I think that I would kind of see our direction, our trajectory, if you will, kind of going in the following two directions, or at least the following two trajectories. First, we have the question of whether it's called a district court or some kind of a part or some kind of a portion of a dedicated court. one way or another, there seems to be a general recognition, or at least a real serious concern, about the prosecution of misdemeanors, especially DWIs, in the local courts. And the question is, do we go with a DWI part alone? Do we go with a misdemeanor part? Do we go with a district court? In other words, I think that is an issue that we have not wrestled to the ground. It clearly is a serious issue. I think we, as Gwen has pointed out and others, Liz has pointed out, we truly need to get a handle on the cost of any one of those alternatives.
And the process.
The process and the cost. I think Liz put it out very succinctly. We need to know what is it going to cost and how do we go about doing it. And both of those are tasks that we can relegate or delegate to our interns, at least to gather the raw data and let us review it. So I think that's one area. And I know we didn't hear a lot about this, my sense is that the area of evictions, landlord-tenant stuff, is also something that we should consider to be included in that particular rubric, maybe with not the same sense of gravitas as the DWIs or the misdemeanors generally, but I think it's at least, I don't want to take that off the table. The second area is this whole notion of what I will call loosely the operational aspects of our local courts. And in first addressing that, I think we need to recognize, especially if we're going with some sort of part, DWI, misdemeanor, whatever, at some other level, I would suggest that we take off the table, at least I would support that we take off the table the notion of having having only lawyer-trained judges presiding over the local courts in that new role. And I would also probably suggest that we take off the table the issue of trying to abolish village courts and have them merge into the town courts. I think those are both they're unnecessary. They are toxic, perhaps, but I'm not afraid of toxicity. But I think they are also just it leads us almost in a red herring kind of direction, especially if we address the more serious criminal cases in some other way. That being said, I think our existing system, whether it is an existing system of the existing courts, or whether we throw out, not through any mandate, but through more of a voluntary form of encouragement, throw out different scenarios where some of the contiguous towns, the smaller contiguous towns, if they wished, could merge with other contiguous towns so that there'd be smaller, fewer courts. But that being said, the things that I think truly ought to be addressed in any event are the issues of setting a more uniform system for bail. And I know we can't guarantee that, you know, or impose that kind of a thing, but I was encouraged recently that the New York City has come up with a bail review mechanism, automatic bail review mechanism, for all misdemeanor cases. I think that we truly need to enact some of the things that Glenn mentioned about the fines and use of confession of judgment instead of jail if people don't pay the fines or can't pay the fines. I think we need to seriously consider something like a youth court. That to me helps to remove some of the most, if not innocuous, at least the youthful indiscretions. And by doing that, yes, Gwen, we're exceeding our mandate, but I think we're doing society a favor because we're trying to help young people avoid the stigma of some kind of a criminal conviction, and even the stigma that comes from having had to go through the local criminal court, even if it ends with an ACD. And I think that in that context, if we don't do some sort of a a misdemeanor court or part, what have you, or even if we do, the notion of centralized arraignment. I'm a little worried about centralized booking or holding cells because I think it encourages unnecessary incarceration. To me, there are very, very, very few cases where individuals who are merely charged with a crime as opposed to having been convicted of a crime, why those individuals should not be released on bail or released in some fashion or another, especially in our highly technologically surveillance-infused society. It is almost impossible for anybody to hide anywhere in the United States, and I think that we need to just be realistic about that. So I think at the end of the day, our task is especially important. I think what's emerging from all this is we really do need to get a handle on the cost factor of the different options of centralizing. I like Scott's idea that we go visit Chenango. If that in fact is in Chenango, we should all just set up a date, and as many of us who can go, let's go, or at least meet with people and get some data from that facility and find out how that's working.
That might be a nighttime visit for us to actually see anything.
Yeah.
Think about it.
And Norwich is a real hot place on a Friday night, right? But I mean, I think, in other words, I think there's more work to be done there. So I think that's kind of where I'm coming from. And the final area is the question of access to the local courts. No matter how they are constituted, we need to figure out how to make them more technologically accessible. So even if the doors aren't open, there ought to be ways that people can get into their records. There ought to be, you know, the publicly records through technology. There ought to be ways that people can file paperwork because of technology. They can file it at 11 o'clock at night, or, you know, so that it shouldn't depend on a clerk being there at a particular hour. There ought to be ways that people can pay fines online, et cetera, et cetera. I think there's a whole plethora of stuff that we can address once, and I'm looking forward to the time when the clerks are here so that we can talk about realistically how that can be done and what they would perceive to be ways that would improve the operation of the system. So in any event, I think those are kind of my thoughts at this point. Does anybody want to discuss anything? And I think what we need to do is to kind of look at where we need to go from here. And I'd be curious, other than what we've already said, have we missed something? Would anybody like to add anything else? Yeah, of course, Dewey. All right. I should say.
I think everybody knows me, but I'm Dewey Dawson.
Yes, I apologize.
That's okay.
Judge Dawson, go ahead, please.
I'm not sure you ever thought I was honorable, but I know.
Honorable Dewey Dawson. I knew you back in the day when you were riding around in a squad car, so there you go.
Maybe we shouldn't say that.
Right.
But when this your commission was first established, many of the judges, including myself, looked at it as a very positive thing, that it seemed like what was the issue here was primarily the economy issues and the issues of a more level handling of cases from court to court within the county, the towns and villages. And I think that many of us, I know that many of us, and I know that not many of us want to say who we are, but many of us feel that this what you're doing, we applaud without hesitation. However, we think that some of us feel that you've moved a little bit too far. Because of it seems like we didn't have this kind of a problem, not talked about as much as it is now, until the edict, if you will, from Judge Lipscomb regarding the 24-hour lawyer at arraignments, and that's when the whole issues again started with the non-lawyer judges as well. They seem to be tied together. And it seems like the stuff that you guys are doing in here, the good stuff, doesn't get reported as much as it does primarily the lawyer, non-lawyer judge situation. And I think that's because it's more than toxic, you know. It's something that really, really is felt. That it's some of the judges feel like it's them against us, but we don't know who them is, really. You know, because on one hand we think that you guys are doing a great job, on the other hand it seems like it always gets back to the non-lawyer judges thing. And you know, obviously, you know, the judges don't want to give up their jobs. And I'll tell you that I think Tompkins County is pretty lucky from the standpoint that the majority of the judges in Tompkins County have been sitting for anywhere from 15 to judge 40 years, you know, and things like that. And I know that there isn't a court session that goes by that I don't glean something new. There's not a new attorney that comes into my court that I don't learn from, even a brand new attorney. And I would like to think that some people can also gain from their experience in our court. And I think that, as Glenn says in his paperwork that got distributed, you know, that, and it's funny because it's in the same topic, is that, you know, if the choice was to be made, it would be better to have a judge or a lawyer-trained judge. And then he says on the other column, many non-lawyer judges are better than lawyer-trained judges. Right. And, you know, and that's the enigma of the whole thing. What I want to basically say is if there's some way that you can concentrate more on the issues of helping, like Mr. Schlatter said tonight, if there's a way to concentrate on fixing or augmenting the current system, you would, I think that would be something that's much more palatable to not only the judges, but also to the community. And one final thing, if I may, I'd like to say that it's, I don't know how to put this actually, the situation of whether or not there's equal treatment and stuff from court to court is an issue, but there, at the current time, there's nothing perfect that I can find about any of this. And I did do some homework on that 170 section that you were talking about. And, you know, it's, I think it's making things available. I wanted to change my court time this week, especially because, not for just this week, but after I saw the issues that were stated in the paper last time, they had a... they had anything that had to do negatively with the town and village courts, and I said, you know that's right. There's a lot of people on Monday night, you know, and I sat down and I found a spot that I thought was pretty good, which was Friday mornings at 9 a.m. and checked with the jail. They thought, well, we only have, as far as getting the incarcerated around, we only have city court, and they don't have to be there down there till 10. And if we need to, we could say we'd be a couple of minutes late or something like that. But I don't have that many people coming to my court. So I checked with the with our assistant DA, and he said he had no problems with it. Of course, he lives in Groton. So, but and then the The last people that I said anything to was Julia at the assigned counsel office, and I ran into almost what I was considering a stone wall, and it's because of city court, because there's so many judges Friday morning at city court, and they're and
so many attorneys, right? Lawyers. Yeah, no.
We got them all. Yeah.
And you know, and if I wanted to be at my place earlier than at your place, you know, that's always been a problem for me. Who gets the choice of when they pick the times? But it seems to me that there's something we could work out with the city court, or we should at least talk to you. And I was going to get a hold of you today, and I didn't try, quite frankly.
All right. You know how to reach me. I would get back to you very quickly, Judge. You know how to reach me, so I'll be happy to talk to you.
All right, so there's a side conversation, but Justice Dawson, thank you. That's been very helpful, and I appreciate your attendance here this evening as well. So.
Right, can I exactly?
Yes,
with
Jason.
With the scheduling, it's not just on the courts, though. You got to remember that a lot of them share the space with the town boards or the village trustees, and so you could put some of the blame on the boards for what's happening with the courts as well. So it's going to take, you know, getting these town boards and village trustees on board with this as well, because some are going to need to move meetings. I mean, I've already, for Dryden, I talked about it with a little bit today with our town attorneys, because we also have to work with our town attorneys for their scheduling too, about maybe moving our town board meeting to a different night so that we can get, I'd have to talk with Judge Ravo too, but if I could maybe get him to switch nights with us, that would help on the Wednesday night end.
Well, but maybe one thing we could do, we could have one of our interns actually develop a matrix, almost a universal thing, get all the town board meetings, all the courts, find out, and then kind of create a big giant chart, and people can then figure out what's more realistic. All right, so we are reaching the end of the day. I think if you can trust a little bit, yes, Justice Chernes.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make an off-the-record comment after you're done.
Sure. We are at a point where I think if you can allow some latitude here, I'll talk to Joe and we'll review all these notes. But I think there are at least two or three, or probably half a dozen items: the cost issues, the you know, how things are implemented issues, this matrix of meeting schedules, that kind of issue. There are several items that have been thrown out here this evening where our interns could probably do some work for us. They are available and looking for things to do. We've given them some tasks, but so we will go ahead and assign certain things. We'll let everybody know, you know, what people are doing. And I think that being said, this has been helpful. I think nobody's committed to anything other than what they've said on the record, and there's been a lot of opportunity here, and a lot of I think people are just trying to get a better sense of where we are and where we need to go to finish this task. So I appreciate that. We will be hearing from the clerks on the 13th of January. Wish you all happy holiday and a happy and safe new year. Have we added value? Can we all?
Aye.
By consensus, aye. We've all added value. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to just make a quick comment that is really related to the work of your task force. And we had some unfortunate news over the weekend, and that my co-judge resigned. And she resigned with encouragement from the Commission on Judicial Conduct. I think that was made plain in several news outlets. I had a conversation with Judge Becker on Monday and encouraged her to just take her personal goods and go home, and she did that. She turned in her keys, took her personal belongings, and will no longer have any interaction with the Newfield Town Court. So all the work of the court is coming to me, and the town board has taken the position, at least in the short term, we will work with one judge. So in the sense that we're talking about perhaps increased efficiencies or lowered costs, maybe doing it by the back door, that's the direction we're going right now.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Justice Chernish. All right, folks, we're all adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you.